Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. We have a cool guest on the show today who is a product marketing professional. He is a New York Times best-selling author, a PMA award finalist, a Harvard Neuroscience certified product marketing expert. So today, I think we're going to talk a lot about product thinking and the thinking that goes behind it. Bill Reed, thank you for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit, just open up with a little bit about your background and what kind of led you to what you do today as being, you know, sort of a product marketing expert.
Many years ago, as a Navy diver, really got interested in some of the cool things around science, because there are a lot of science that goes into diving, and that led me into the tech industry. But I quickly realized that I didn't really have the head for being an engineer, and I gravitated more toward the marketing side of the fence, but I still was fascinated by some of the technologies and also some of the new sciences that were coming to play. Years later, got involved with neuroscience, neuromarketing, and that's led to where I am today.
Nice. And so, you know, a lot of product managers listen to this show, and product management is part of the marketing, you know, the world, right? So you've got your engineers, you've got your designers, and then you've got the people who we all need to count on for being connected to the marketplace. And they need to know what gaps exist, and they need to know how their own product is going to fill those gaps. So before we go any further, can you define for us, when you're talking about marketing, such a broad term that means so many things to so many different people, could you define that a little bit for us?
You bet. Typically, what I see are three sides of the marketing fence. One of those sides, of course, is the demand gen area, and that is social media, doing your advertising, the outreach, email marketing, things of that nature, to SEO, of course, would be part of that. And it's really around creating the demand, the awareness, and the attention, and so forth. And then you have the other side, which is the product marketing side. And that gets involved in, what do we need to produce? What are the customers saying? What's the market saying? What's the competition look like? Where is it heading? How big is it? And how do we ensure that we are properly messaging this? So messaging is probably one of the key parts of that. And the other side of that would be more strategic. That might be at the CMO level, looking at where the company is headed, what direction do we need to go. There's a real strong tie with product marketing, but quite often the strategic side of it would be more the executive level, looking at where we're headed in the long term.
Excellent. And so, and when we're thinking about, you know, making a product the best that it can be, right? So that it's a product-led success, you know, and we're not relying on the sort of outside messaging stuff, although that's critical and important. What do you think the marketing role should be in the shaping of the product itself? Do you have any ideas along that?
You know, especially on the product marketing side of the fence, any good product marketer needs to be connected at the hip with the product management team. Typically PM and PMM are the terms we see defined. And this is true across really almost any industry, probably even more so in the tech industry, certainly. But it's understanding who is engaged with the product aspects, more from a functional side, maybe a technical side. It could be engineering that's involved. And being able to translate what can the company actually do, and deciding what the company should do based upon the customer input. But the key function is to make sure that you are headed in the right direction. And I would say probably the most important thing that any product marketer could do is ensure you've got the right messaging. That usually starts with what we call a messaging guide that everyone uses, and processing that in the right way, making sure you're communicating that in the right way. And it's not just about value props and things of that nature, but how are you positioning the product so that it'll resonate quite well with the audience?
Right. Right. So then let's get into some of the things, the topics that you've written about, sort of the neuroscience of the neuroengineering. What is that?
Well, many years ago, Ali Schmidt, who was most noted for, he was from Harvard, for inventing what we now call neuromarketing. And now on the consumer side of the fence, you're seeing a large number of companies use it, from Apple to Coca-Cola to Frito-Lay, Procter & Gamble, many car companies. Many years ago, when I was consulting with Hewlett Packard, we used it there for the consumer side. And what it really is about is determining how our brains respond to various different messages and understanding how our brains process that information. We have really three parts of our brain, even though some people may only have half a brain. Most of us have three brains, a little more logical, emotional, instinctual. And it can be simple as, for example, Procter & Gamble, I believe it was, that had an ad, and they measured the eyes and where they were tracking on the ad. And they had a baby looking, this was for a diaper product, baby looking directly at you. And your eyes tracked to the baby's face. When they turned the baby's face and had the baby looking at the headline, your eyes tracked to the headline. And that gave them 3x more response and click-throughs, et cetera. Yahoo changed one color on a click-through and gave them 30% increase on a click-through. So these are little subtle things that if we understand how the brain works and how neuroscience works, we can dramatically improve our marketing results.
And this is really interesting stuff, especially for our listeners who are into psychology and design psychology, that this also is on the marketing side. So when we're talking about using these neuromarketing techniques, are we mainly talking about the content of ads? Is that the primary domain?
That is one of the key domains, but it could be the product design. Apple uses it, of course, for how should the iPhone look and feel in our hand? How do we respond to that? The neuromarketing aspects are a key part of it. And the other aspect, which I wrote about quite a bit in my Start With Who book, is the storytelling aspect. How do we properly tell the story? And I thought I knew how to tell stories many years ago. And I went to a writer's conference in Maui and discovered that I knew nothing about telling stories. There are many, many elements that go into a proper story. It took me 2 weeks, but I emerged from that as the most improved writer in the group, which says a lot about what I couldn't do when I walked through the door. And there are certain aspects now that in my book, I relate to what's happening in the brain and how our brain responds. When we increase certain neurochemicals and neurotransmitters or decrease them in our brains at certain parts of the story flow. Think about a three-act play, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, for example. What happens to Dorothy in Act 1, Act 2, Act 3? What's going on in the brain? What are some of the words, the pacing, the style, the tone, the colors, the imagery that we're trying to paint can all make a huge difference in how the audience reacts to that story and therefore how they react to the offering, to the solution or product that we're trying to deliver.
Now, this is really interesting stuff because coming from the design side, we have to think about that all the time because the user who's using a product is kind of going through a story and we storyboard things out and we try to anticipate things. You know, so if somebody is leading a digital product, you know, what role should the expertise play in the, or let me ask it this way. The person who is a product manager or a product executive, how do you think they should incorporate this kind of thinking into the management of their company? Where does it intersect, and what should they do to make sure that that's happening?
One of the key things that we now know, and that's how we've taken the neuroscience approach and integrated it into the Remotely Me company that I'm now with, using what I wrote about, is understanding how the brain works in relation to how the story unfolds. And we now know that there are really 9 distinct profile types based upon our brain chemistry. That's what we've done, is basically map biomarkers to those attributes. And so certain people will respond differently and react differently to not only your marketing, but your product. Years ago, I spent some time really getting coached by and interviewing a key executive at Amazon who was involved in the product, not only for various companies, but the products, and coaching those companies on how to design their packaging, how to design their products, what happens when a customer gets the package, what is that experience they should go through. And it's all about the story unfolding. It's like Christmas morning, you're opening this package and you just bought this product. And what's that experience? What do you feel? What goes on in the brain when you unwrap and when you open this up and you pull out the instructions, and then you've got, oh, look, here's a surprise here. I wasn't counting on something free, et cetera. There's all these little tricks and things that you can do through that experience. And you can map that out. Act one, the customer does this. Act two, the customer does that. But you really need to start with who. Who is your customer? Of the 9 key profile types, which 3 are your primary targets and why? And what happens in their brains? How do you design your product and your product experience to appeal to the primary target audience, the circle, that red circle in the middle of your target? That should be where you're focusing.
Now, which book of yours relates mostly to this? And talk about a little bit what a product team who maybe uses your book as one of their guides to thinking like this, what kind of things would they get from that?
That would be the Start With Who book. And got some really wonderful quotes from folks. Ken Blanchard of the 1 Minute Manager, as well as a VP at Workday, talking about how this is the next generation, perhaps beyond Simon Sinek's Start With Why. Also, the Challenger Sale. How does that sales process unfold? Because when we're marketers, we are in sales. We are empowering the sales team. We're really trying to sell something. Otherwise, well, why are we in the seat we're in? So what is that process and experience? And it really dives into how to properly tell this story and unfold it in the right way. And not only design solutions, but design your approach and your messaging, as well as making sure you've got the right people doing the right thing. It's probably more important to ensure that the right people on your team are doing certain parts of the job required to market or to design a product, et cetera. Do they have the right skill sets and attributes? And by skills, I mean soft skills are most important. And all of that becomes a key part of your decision-making process.
Yeah, excellent. So the, you know, because I'm constantly thinking about methodology, you know, again, on the design side, we're ruled by methodology, books and speakers and conferences. And I'm always thinking about how, from the product leadership and strategy perspective, how can more methodology be incorporated into their day-to-day work, right? You know, just thinking about business strategy. Do you think that is the same as being the product designer who's thinking actively about the psychology? How do I design this into the product? Or is there other territory that you think relates to the business strategy side of things beyond the design of the product that that's worth talking about or mentioning?
I think all those aspects are key to making sure that you've got a team that knows where their strengths are and what they should be doing. And that really is the first step. And that's when we say start with who, that is a key component of starting with who, is do we have the right people doing the right things within our organization? We now know from studies, Gallup's 2023 State of the Workplace Report, almost 80% of workers don't trust, and so they're disengaged. How do we ensure they're engaged? And it's by understanding what they're going to be best at. And then once we know that, we can begin to put them in the right positions, in the right seats. And then it becomes teaching. And this is the key part of what selling is all about. The Challenger sale touched upon this a little bit. You talk about teaching, tailoring, taking control of the sale. It's really now about teaching. Aristotle taught us this thousands of years ago, how to persuade people by appealing to logical, emotional, instinctual triggers. And we now know that's part of our brain responses. But the teaching methodology that a lot of the schools have used is called FORMAT, the number four, M-A-T. And it's about making sure that our ability to teach people is in relation to how they like to learn. That's one of the key things. If you take our CQI assessment, for example, you'll discover what your learning style is. And then if you know who your target audience is, you can understand what their learning style is. Selling is about teaching. So when you market, what you want to do is thought leadership. Teach people something. We like to learn. It's not about, oh, we've got this value prop and that value prop. It's about, hey, did you know this? Were you aware of this? Let's teach you something. And you'll pull us in, we'll learn, and we'll go, wow, that's pretty cool. Now you've built trust, which is related to a brain chemical called oxytocin. 91% of sales is all about trust. So you got to build trust. If you do that, they can love you and your brand and your product almost as much as they love their dog.
I love that. So mechanistically, the way that's happening is you're teaching someone, number one, they're getting something. They're actually already getting value from you. And then you're building trust where you have that connection there. That's awesome. So how about we mention a little bit what Remotely Me is working on and doing?
As I mentioned, Remotely Me is the first to map what we call predictive biomarkers. Now, what's a biomarker? Essentially, in neuroscience, it is about understanding how your different brain neurochemicals, neurotransmitters are balanced, how you're wired. And this is a biological wiring that can help us to then understand what your key soft skills are. Now, we know from all the experts out there, from Harvard to LinkedIn, et cetera, there's 10 key soft skills. One of those is trust, by the way. And once we know what those soft skills are, we can begin to align those to roles and responsibilities so that we can understand who's going to be best at doing what. We can also then understand the personas from the marketing perspective. We can say, our primary audience are these three profile types. What are their key soft skills? Why do I care? Because if I know what their soft skills are, then I can understand what is going to resonate the best with them from a messaging standpoint and what they're going to be interested in, what they're going to want to learn about. I can develop my thought leadership then to focus on those things that will appeal to their soft skills, because that's what they're going to be interested in. Then I can take them down the path and show them how my solution can help them to improve their ability to do their work. We spend more of our time at work than anything else. So if we can relate our solution, our value props, to avoiding risks and gaining gains, primarily related around our work, even though we have a consumer product, How do you relate that to how somebody can do a better job? That's a real key.
And you go into detail in this in Start With Who, is that correct? Excellent. And for the listeners who want to look it up, when you look it up, it's that I've been saying Bill Reed. On the cover, you'll see W. Craig Reed, exactly, just so the listeners don't get confused when they're ordering the book. This is really excellent stuff. So where can folks find you, your work, and get more from you?
Very simple, remotelyme.com. You can pop up there and take a look. And by the way, for a short period of time, we are also offering individuals the ability to join us in becoming shareholders. We have a Regulation CF campaign going. It won't last for very long. We did this primarily because we are veteran-owned, and we wanted to open up to our fellow veterans and their families. But for others that we have communications with, we've opened it up a bit beyond that. And so for a short period, you can join us. But all the information about my book and about the solutions, et cetera, are there. And you can also, there's a very short period of time, we're doing a promotion. It's the Career Quotient Indicator, the CQI. Think of it as Myers-Briggs on massive steroids. Gives you a neuroscience overview of your strengths, your attributes, your soft skills, what your right career paths are. You can select a career that you want to go into, and it'll show you your scores. And then there's an offering of certain specific neuroscience-based training courses that can help you get there.
Sounds great. Really, really cool stuff. Bill Reed, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.